Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
It is a Wednesday in March, and I am in a room of a dozen crying chaplains. A month prior, our employer announced that due to a projected budget shortage, hundreds of staff would be laid off. They emphasized that the layoffs would be focused on non-patient-facing positions. So when my colleagues and I learned that two full-time staff chaplains, the director of our department, and the only chaplain educator we had on our team were being laid off and their positions eliminated, we were shocked, and we definitely cried. How could this happen? How could they say patient-facing positions would not be impacted and then make such a huge cut to such a small patient care department? I love my job. I've been working as a chaplain for 11 years this summer. So the weeks leading up to the layoffs, my fear made me convinced that I would be losing my job. The day of the layoffs, when I knew that they were scheduled to happen, I got dressed up in my most professional attire, and my husband kindly walked with me to the train to help calm my nerves. When I found out that I still had a job, it was only a temporary relief. On that Wednesday, my colleagues and I cried, not just because of those of us we were losing, but because it felt like our greatest fear was being realized. No matter how hard we educated, advocated, and served, spiritual care in some way was expendable to the hospital administration. Over the years, I have felt like Sisyphus trying to roll a giant boulder up the mountain. And that Wednesday, I cried as I felt the boulder of my work roll back down, crushing me on its way to the base of the mountain and out of sight. I felt despair, like a heaviness in my chest. I couldn't think clearly. It wasn't just grief for what we were losing, but also fear for an uncertain future. I felt despair, not just for myself, but for my colleagues who were losing their jobs and the work they loved. I despaired for those of us who were being left behind to pick up the pieces. I felt despair for seminarians who were moving to Boston and would now have even fewer places to go for their required hospital training. But most of all, I despaired for the patients, families, and staff who would feel abandoned by us. Not by our choosing, but by the limitations of what we are being left to work with. The day the chaplain layoffs were announced, a man found his way to my office, which is no easy feat, and caught me in the hall as I was leaving. "My son-in-law is in the ICU and he is very sick," he told me. "I need to talk to a chaplain. I need a chaplain to talk to my daughter." That same week, as I was despairing, I supported patients with new cancer diagnoses, led groups on spiritual coping on the inpatient psychiatric unit, and led prayers and provided counsel to families as their loved ones died unexpectedly. The need for spiritual care is so high. On my way home from work that week, maybe not the best self-care tactic, but I scrolled through the news headlines. I learned of USAID workers, scientists, and civil servants losing their jobs. I read articles about how many careers will be replaced by artificial intelligence. I saw wildfires, catastrophic floods, and starving children. I saw terrible, useless wars that should have ended ages ago. The week of the layoffs was the second week of March, and I received a kind email from Reverend Parisa that week checking in on me on the 5-year anniversary of the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. how did I go from being a frontline worker and a healthcare hero to wondering if my job will still exist in a year? Again, what could I do but cry? The despair felt bad, but crying, especially for a reluctant crier like myself, felt good. It felt honest, vulnerable, and true. Crying with my colleagues, I could see that we all loved something that mattered, even if it seemed like the hospital administration disagreed. Our work as chaplains so often is to meet others in their despair. In her book, My Year of Magical Thinking, Joan Didion reflects on how all the worst moments in our lives arrive on ordinary days. Writing about her husband's sudden death, she says, "Life changes in an instant. You sit down to dinner and life as you know it ends." This is the spiritual crisis we encounter in our lives, the sudden loss and change of illness, tragedy, and death. This is where we need a chaplain or a minister who can listen and help us muddle through the why and how of it all. In her book, Atlas of the Heart, social worker Brené Brown writes, when extreme hopelessness seeps into the corners of our lives and combines with extreme sadness, we feel despair. She goes on to quote theologian Rob Bell, who defines despair as the belief that tomorrow will be just like today. Despair is the absence of hope. It is grief for a future that seems to be forever out of reach. It is fear of the unknown, and it is anger about it being taken away. Yet I think we as Unitarian Universalists struggle with accepting despair as an emotion. We like action, critical thinking, and we love our Unitarian ancestor, Reverend Theodore Parker's quote, "The arc of the moral universe is long and bends toward justice." We sing and pray and preach that tomorrow will be different than today. It will be better. What is our theology of despair? Don't do it. Even now, I feel uncomfortable admitting that, yes, I despair. It feels sacrilegious, kind of shameful. What right do I have to despair? I should get up and do something, which is what I do most of the time. But I've been wondering if by jumping into action and running away from my despair, if I am missing out on something important. In particular, I've been thinking about the difference between feeling despair and the act of despair. Despair as an action is one possible response to feeling despair. It is true that when despair is an action, it is stagnant, it is resigned, it pulls others down into the pit with us as we fall. But feelings, emotions, they can come and go. They are messengers that arise in response to our experiences and inform our behaviors. The feeling of despair is painful, but it also clarifies what we love, what we value, and what we hope for. Mindfulness, attentiveness, and self-compassion can help us recognize when we are feeling despair, and then we can learn what it has to teach us. American Buddhist nun Pema Chodron writes, "Things falling apart is a kind of testing and also a kind of healing. We think that the point is to pass the test, to overcome the problem, but the truth is that things don't really get solved. They come together and they fall apart, then they come together again and they fall apart again. It's just like that. The healing comes from letting there be room for it all to happen. Room for grief, for relief, for misery, for joy." So this morning, I do invite us to make room for the despair that we may be feeling. We have many reasons to despair. I'm sure you can think of some. We have reasons to feel hopeless, afraid, angry, and numb to it all. I'm not going to convince you otherwise or instruct you how to feel differently. I'm also not worried that you're going to get stuck or that you can't handle it. We are in this together. As we have heard from so many awesome summer speakers already, we have great wisdom in this community about how to keep going, to care for one another, and how to fight back. So I believe we can do this too. What do we do with our despair? We should allow ourselves to feel it. If you're like me, there might be a voice in your head that's already saying, no, thank you, I don't want to feel despair. That's okay. But I'm not asking you to despair the verb. I'm asking you to honor your despair the noun, the feeling. We don't need to be ashamed of this feeling. While it is normal to be afraid of where our despair will take us, we have a lot of evidence that we can move through it. Just by being here now, we are showing that we can feel despair without giving up. I feel despair, and I am not giving up. A few days ago, I got a phone call from the wife of a patient I met in the midst of the layoffs. She called to say she and her husband were finally home after months of cancer treatment. She thanked me for showing up for her and her husband every time they were admitted. In the background, I could hear her husband yelling to me from across the room, "We really appreciate you. You helped so much." It meant a lot to me. I'm still angry and sad and scared, but I am also grateful that my despair has not stopped me from doing the important work that I love. I am grateful for my fellow chaplains here and all over the country who have supported me to continue doing this work. And I am grateful for the people I care for in the hospital, in this congregation, wherever I go, who show me time and again that we can despair and heal and love and grow together. My friend Chelsea Steiner Scudder wrote a book about becoming a mother in this time of climate catastrophe. It's called Mother Creature Kin: What We Learn from Our Nature's Mothers in a Time of Unraveling. In the book, Chelsea gets to know a barn owls, right whales, New England forests, tidal marshes, and ancient single-celled organisms, all from which she is seeking wisdom for how to care for her child when the only future possible is one that will bring bigger storms, further displacement, and mass extinction. I'd like to finish with a passage from Chelsea's book. She writes, "When I try to imagine versions of the future from the opposing vantage points of hope and despair, the images are always blurry. And so, as I have long known despair to be, hope has become an unreliable narrator. Too shaky a foundation on which to repair the world. And I choose instead that which holds me steady, that which clears the fog from my eyes, that which does not flicker, but only burns brighter no matter my grief, my anger. I choose love. It is upon love that I will do what I can to heal. It is upon love that I will kneel to pray. It is upon love that I will guide our daughter's feet." I keep coming back to this passage. I too feel that any future I imagine right now is blurry. I too choose love. Despair, if we look at it straight on, honestly, can just be a feeling. Love can be the action. And we do love well here. May we feel what needs to be felt in our bodies and our spirits. May we cry when we need to, pause when we need to, and always act from love. May it be so. So before our benediction, I invite those of you in the Zoom room to please reach out your hands and touch the sides of your square. And those of you in the sanctuary, let's reach out our hands too. sending loving kindness to people on your left and your right, people all around, the people next to you and the people next to them. Send out love to this beloved spiritual community and feel it coming back to you. Love is the spirit of this congregation. And now for our benediction, and I invite you to put your hands over your heart, offering yourself some of that loving kindness for exactly who you are, for exactly what you feel today. We end our service today with these words from theologian and writer Barbara Brown Taylor. For those willing to stay awake, pain remains a reliable altar in the world, a place to discover that a life can be as full of meaning as it is of hurt. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when this service ends. Bless your hearts. I love you. Amen.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.